AI is actually better at providing feedback on giving assessments than most managers would be. You're on the spot with that AI and that customer, and you need to lead them towards a certain conclusion. You either do or you don't. If I asked your entire team your most common objection, what percentage would get it right? They'll think for a second and they'll say, oh, I don't know, 20, 30%. How is that acceptable that 70% every day, each time they respond to it, they don't quite know for sure what to say? Our service is all about ROI. We're taking the really critical techniques, questions to ask, actionable strategies, packaging them in such a way that people can practice them and really learn them in a short period of time. If we can do that, we can dramatically impact churn. And that's what we've done in numerous cases. Hi, I'm Jim Ketting. I'm here with Ed Kerr, founder of Practice AI. I'm real excited to have Ed here, and we're excited to talk a little bit about the role and the technologies of that are now available to VPs of sales and sales managers.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, looking forward to sharing what we're doing at Practice and how we help to transform sales teams, change behavior, make people better and more confident and capable in the sales conversation. So glad to be here.
I'm really looking forward to seeing this demo later on in the podcast with the AI that you're actually going to do live. So a little teaser for everyone. We're going to do a live demo that'll blow your socks off. So Ed, if I am a new chief revenue officer, I just worked at this big insurance company, and another big insurance company has hired me over to take over sales. The bottom line is they want more sales out of the existing sales force. And I want to look at all of the resources that I have to get that done. Now, the company the year before just spent a fortune getting everyone on Salesforce. They've got some coaches, some training, but they've been trying to move the numbers for years. And pretend you're coming in as the new VP of sales, and you're going to talk to them about how artificial intelligence will transform those sales people. Can you give me an insight on how this might help him in his new role be a hero?
Sure. Well, I think where we start is we first really need to understand the sale and what their sales process looks like, and where their are critical conversions throughout the sales process.
Oh, this is good.
And we tend to focus on those initially and primarily. And for example, the first conversion might be that first call and whether you get a meeting or not. The next could be, do you get to the decision maker? Is there a conversation around price that's critical to move towards a close? There are various things that are kind of universal and common to every single sale. But we'd focus on very often the top of the funnel first and how successful are their conversion rates there. And very often we'll find in any sales organization, there is a large percentage that are not very skilled at certain conversations. And it might be that prospecting call, for example. And what are their current conversion rates? Can we increase them by 5%, 10%, 25%, 30%, whatever? And so the next question is, what are the winning techniques, the most successful techniques towards getting that meeting? And there might be a handful of salespeople that do it their own way and do it well. And can we capture, kind of codify that, share it with the rest of the team? And then we ultimately will train the AI to actually be a customer and to respond to winning strategies and push back like all customers do.
That sounds good. Now, a lot of the times, you know, when you're thinking about sales and you think of the pipeline, you think of the sales funnel, half of the solution is defining the problem really, really well. And so when you go through and you look at the pipeline, or if you look at the sales funnel going down, a lot of times everyone wants to go to closing. but there's a lot to that pipeline before we get into closing. Going in and looking at different companies, it's different for every company. If I'm an insurance company versus a lawn care company, my pipeline, I'm going through initial contact to a close, but there's different words I'm saying. There's different motivations for the customer. When you go in and you look at an organization, you're trying to look at, from my understanding, what is the main lever? What is the linchpin? Or where in that sales funnel or sales pipeline can you make the biggest difference? How do you go about and help a company and find out where in the pipeline they need to make the change?
Well, they usually tell us. And the first question is really what is the most frustrating friction point for them in their sales process? And it might be around price, because it might be that the majority of their team does not know how to have the price versus value conversation. And we find that very often it's pretty common. There's a sales leader who knows exactly what he or she wants done, what to say when, what questions to ask. And they want to kind of duplicate themselves if they can. And so if that's the case, then we can do that pretty effectively because we'll capture their strategic approach, the actual words they say, the clarity that they have in terms of the why of what they're saying and the objective they have in that moment. And we can capture that. And once we do, we train the AI to be persuaded by that. We try to make it as simple as possible. There's a lot more to it than that, but ultimately they'll tell us where their team is struggling the most. And very often if it's a case of new hires that we're training, new hires just need to know the basics, and they also need to feel confident when they initiate certain conversations, whether it's a cold call or knocking on a door. Mm-hmm. If it's in the context of insurance, it could be certainly a cold call or an initial conversation where it's sussing out the needs that potential customer might have. And they need to be trained on the discovery questions. So it all depends, but usually sales leadership will tell us exactly where they feel the biggest need is.
I want to drill down on that discovery questions, because that is something that I think is really important for salespeople. If you ever study salespeople and you look at them, one is really good at question asking. And I think that they are good at it because they nurture. They set it up and say, hey, I'm going to ask you a question. Is it okay if I ask you a question? Would you mind if I ask you a question? Can I do that? And they're very effective pulling things out of the customer. The bad ones just go right into interrogation mode, and they mm-hmm. feel like they're under the microscope, and it's kind of off-putting to the end customer. When your AI is set up as the customer, can you tell me how it would – do you set the AI up to react in the way a customer would, and then do you have another component that's an AI that comes back and helps coach the sales rep for those questions?
Yes, absolutely. And when we set the AI up to respond a certain way, we can actually make the AI be a certain persona or respond very favorably. So it can be a kind of an easy version of the AI, or a medium, hard, and impossible. We actually set an impossible version where it's very, very difficult to get them to agree with you. And we'll also, of course, train them on what type of an assessment to give, what sort of a scoring rubric the company would want. And then that also can include their soft skills. Are they empathetic, authentic, friendly, polite, professional? So it's very effective. And we found that the AI is actually better at providing feedback on giving assessments than most managers would be. And the managers admit it. And I think it's because number one, the AI is objective. And if you're a learner, there's no, there's not really a personal relationship that you can't take offense at the AI objectively telling you what you could have done differently or better. And the AI is also attuned to what good looks like. So if you miss the mark, without fail, it can tell you each time what you need to do differently to hit the mark the next time. So, the feedback that's given, the coaching that's given can be distilled and fairly short, or it can be, fairly comprehensive. So that's another thing we can dial up or down.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Something you drill down on. A lot of sales managers are not real good coaches.
Well, a lot of them come from operations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them either weren't necessarily great salespeople themselves or didn't have much interest in sales theory or methodology. And so they're at a loss. They probably react to the basic soft skills, or sort of whether someone recited some facts the right way or not. So I think it just kind of depends on that sales leader. But our goal is really to take so much off the sales manager's plate and the sales leader's plate, because we find that in different industries, different types of companies, different sizes, the sales leaders are buried. They're drinking from a fire hose. They don't have time to do ride-alongs. They don't have time to role play. They don't have time to watch a bunch of videos. And a lot of them, they're just quite frankly not that interested in it. They're burned out from doing that.
Yeah.
So can we provide a proxy for them that will go out and do it for them repeatedly, multiple times a day, and do it better, so that all they need to look at is ultimately a dashboard or a report which gives them detailed understanding of the performance of their individual people in a proactive simulation.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I mean, if I was a VP of sales and I said, okay, well, I think and I believe that all of my salespeople need better coaching. For me to get my sales managers up to that point would take forever and a day, but then I can also hire outside people to come in and be coaches. But if I said, okay, well, I want you to coach every one of my 200 salespeople for 15 minutes a day in the morning and 15 minutes in the afternoon to improve. And the newbies, we're going to do, 2 hours a day starting off. I mean, my payroll would go through the roof. I could not do this. And I don't think they'd be as effective as where AI is at right now.
Yeah, I think the key thing with practice, we have the greatest impact on companies that have large dispersed teams. Every company suffers to a certain degree from the telephone game. Mm-hmm. And we find that senior leadership or the thought leaders in a company have a clear understanding of the sale and how it should be conducted, the temperament, obviously the different sales personalities conduct sales different ways, but there's an ideal or desired way that they would want their frontline reps to communicate with their customers and to pursue a sale. That by the time that someone gets on board as a new hire or someone's been there for over a year, it doesn't matter. There's ultimately what's the word I'm looking for? I'll roll back and start this over again. I got it. Okay. So in every company, every company suffers from the telephone game syndrome, I call it, where there's a disparity between how the leaders in the company would have a sale be conducted and how the actual frontline reps do it, whether they be new hires or people that have been there for a long time. Sales has always been something of a wild, wild west environment. And I think leadership has always wanted to kind of corral it and systematize it and be able to actually establish best practices that the rest of the team can quickly adhere to and follow. And not to say that everyone is a robot and everyone does it exactly the same, but everybody understands the best conversational strategies to apply in certain situations. And that's what we do at practice. So so what we can do is go in and essentially codify the organizational intelligence of these techniques and get them out to the front lines in a way that is accessible anytime, anywhere, for people to engage with on demand. And so we're meeting the learners where they are and when they need it. And we have one company that has well over 5,000 people on our system, and their people are using our system every single day. There's no way that a whole army of sales managers or coaches could do that. And so that's where obviously technology is such a wonderful way to scale certain services. And now the way that AI is and how good it is and how effective it is and how much of an even better coach it is than a lot of sales coaches. And I'll probably anger a lot of coaches in saying that, but in certain ways it is. You know, it's an incredibly efficient way to get everybody singing from the same sheet music or playing from the same sheet music.
I think that's a really good point. When you start thinking of music, I think of a fourth grade band, mm-hmm. and I think of the symphony. And the biggest difference in the fourth grade band and the symphony is a lot of practice. And as a VP of sales, I don't have 10, 12 years to get my sales team up to that symphony level. But right now I feel sometimes, you know, if I was the role of the sales manager, the VP of sales, I would feel sometimes my sales force is the exact opposite of a symphony, mm-hmm. which is a cacophony. You know, it's like standing on the New York corner, busy section. You got horns honking and all the noise and buzz, and there's no, you know, everyone's kind of doing their own thing. Like you said, the Wild Wild West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you think about it, why can't it be that way? Why shouldn't it be better organized? And why shouldn't everyone be expected to meet a certain level of capability? One of the things that has always been kind of shocking to me, and it's really not shocking when I talk to sales leaders, but we'll ask the question every single time when we have a conversation with a potential customer. And it's, if I asked your entire team your most common objection, what percentage would get it right? And without fail, it's usually they'll think for a second and they'll say, oh, I don't know, 20, 30%.
Really?
And how is that acceptable that 70%, as much as 70% every day are fielding a question that they know they're going to get, and they're fielding it over and over again, and each time they respond to it, they don't quite know for sure what to say. And that's their core role, is to, you know, be able to field those types of questions and conduct that sales conversation, and yet they can't. And it's sort of accepted in many sales organizations. So how much is that impacting not just that specific question that they're not fielding well, but what other aspects of the sales conversation are they unsure of or not handling well? And how often is that leading to a burned lead, which might cost $200 or $1,500? How often is that leading to a missed sales opportunity that could be costing $100,000? I don't know. And then how often does that sales person, who may be a new hire, develop sales reluctance pretty quickly because they don't know what they're doing, they're not making any money, and they quit? And how much does that cost the company? So we really kind of like to focus on where the rubber meets the road. And the first assessment is, do your people know what to say? Do you know if they know what to say? And we'll often find that they don't. And there's no excuse for that. Not today. Not with the technology that we have, the ability to efficiently scale an offering like this. They should be buttoned up. And they should be confident, and they should have the tools they need to succeed. And we can do that very effectively and very quickly.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned something about confidence, and I want to drill down on that. I find that salespeople are really effective when they're confident. And without that confidence, it's very difficult. Can you tell me a little bit about how practice helps salespeople improve their confidence?
Yes, and for sure, I agree 100%. Confidence in sales is extremely important because you've got to project confidence so that people feel confident that you're the right choice.
Let me rephrase that. So I mean, practice. If practice improves confidence, no matter what, it doesn't matter if you're playing a musical instrument or knowing how to handle objections. What evidence have you seen? I mean, you've probably talked to some salespeople or gotten some videos or some testimonials where you can see them and you see their confidence as they're explaining to them. They've hit their goals. They weren't hitting their goals. They're hitting their numbers now. I mean, tell me about that.
Yeah, I think it's a universal truth. Like you said, whether you're a musician or an athlete, a salesperson, any kind of craftsperson, we all get better with practice, mm-hmm. no matter what. And, conversation is something that absolutely, especially complicated or awkward or intentional conversations, a salesperson is very often up against a lot of challenges when they go into a conversation involving a sale, because of the resistance that naturally most buyers have. The buyers have done their research in the market and they're sussing out who to trust, who to put their confidence in. And, if you're not skilled at that conversation, I mean, haven't had reps, haven't had practice at it, you're going to be unsure of what to say. And you're going to feel on the spot and you're going to feel like, you're at a loss for words or for the proper approach. So, if we can capture the best tactics, distill them and put them in a format that salespeople can quickly access and practice through repetition and, really kind of internalize that. And then when they're in those real situations, they're naturally more confident. So
I think that's really good. I think, a lot of salespeople, the challenge is they're on the other side of a prospective buyer and they're either struggling with competence or they're struggling with warmth. And the words that they use and how they say those words are going to affect the trust relationship that they have. And until they practice and become intentional versus accidental, because a lot of salespeople shoot from the hip, it's really difficult to, get to that point of having the right balance of competence and warmth that prospect sees.
Yeah, and that's why I think the importance of our system is there's really kind of two components to it. There's what we call the batting cage for sales teams, and that's where we've curated the right actionable sort of conversational strategies. They're in script form, and they're there for the learner, the salesperson to study, engage with, understand, and then through repetition learn. Right, much like an actor might learn their lines. And that's why we think of it as a batting cage. It's just that repetition of those best practices. And then they go into a scrimmage with the AI. And that's unpredictable. You're on the spot because even though you know it's an AI, it feels like a real human being and you don't want to, fall on your face. But each conversation is different with the AI, but you have a goal in mind. You have an intention. And that might be to get the close, or that might be to earn their trust, or that might be to get a meeting. But you have an agenda that you're following as a salesperson, but you've also got to earn the trust of that customer. So it's a bit of a minefield, and if you're not clear on your approach and your strategy, and you're not genuinely curious about the needs of the customer and what sorts of questions to ask to ascertain that need, then you'll likely miss the mark.
Yeah, I think that's really good. That's really good insight. One thing that you mentioned, that you've got a customer, they've got 5,000 people, they're using Practice, and you've got somebody looking at the data to tell who's getting better and who's practicing and who's not practicing. Tell me how that information or that data helps the sales operations and sales management team direct those salespeople.
Yeah, we're always looking for that correlation between practice and performance, and I think we find it all the time. And we've got numerous case studies and numerous individual salespeople that we can point to who spent time on practice, spent time scrimmaging, and as a result, increased their conversions. Very often dramatically so. And it's particularly gratifying to me when we see, for example, a new hire who comes in and can ramp up very, very quickly, because we're kind of giving them the answers to the test, and we're giving them the hard-earned, distilled organizational intelligence, and we're saying, hey, right, here are the cliff notes. You want to be successful and impact this, conduct this sale effectively? Well, this is the best way that we know how to do it. Now, go practice it. That's it. And, make it your own. Be comfortable with it, but understand the why and who we are as a company, and then make sure you go out and engage and look for the right cues when you're engaging with a potential customer. Because they give them to you either by what they say or what their face shows or their body posture. So we can offer a wonderful environment for them to get good and get confident quickly.
I like that. Now, when you are a sales manager, one of the things you look at is you look at Salesforce, you look at numbers that people are doing. It's like, okay, well, I see this guy made 200 calls, this guy made 100 calls, and this guy made, 75 calls. Well, the guy making the 75 calls, sometimes, strangely enough, is outperforming the guy who's made the 200 calls. It seems to me that practice would be really good for that guy making the 200 calls because he's just not getting the traction that he needs to. And I really, as a sales manager, wouldn't have a way of, I could send, you need to talk to him, but there's a lot to, I don't know how he's saying it or what he's saying or what she's saying, but the results just aren't there compared to the guy that did the 70 calls and had bigger, better results.
Yeah. And it's not for lack of effort, obviously. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. My guess would be that in that situation, that person who's made 200 calls and has not been as successful as the person who's made 75 calls is they're telling and not asking. They're, mm-hmm. Probably, that old saying, showing up and throwing up, they're selling and they're not really, investigating and understanding the needs of the customer and conducting the right sort of discovery conversation. And I think if they're not habituated to that, to really understand, seek first to understand before being understood, then they're going to repeat that behavior over and over again. And so one of the things that we can do, I think we're really good at fixing bad habits, because if I go through a scripted discovery conversation, it's not all discovery conversations are going to be the same, but ultimately I'm asking a lot of the same conversations or questions rather over and over again. If I do that enough, I'm going to get used to it. It's going to be there. It's going to be in my long-term memory. And so I think we can help break some bad habits with repetition of best practices.
Oh, I love that. And, does the AI, let me ask you this, because there's different personality types. There are, what, 16 different personality types if you do the five voices or Myers-Briggs or DISC. You know, there's always, you know, everyone has their own spin on it. My personal favorite is the five voices, but I find that some salespeople will talk themselves out of a sale, and that's their tendency. They have a tendency, and this pattern goes through, and they talk themselves out of a sale. And then I've got the other type of a salesperson who is just the Gestapo, you know. Let me ask you a few questions, you know. And they go through this interrogation mode. And one of them has talked himself out of a sale, and the other can't get past first base because no one wants to be interrogated, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's different personality types. They have different tendencies, two different individuals that have different tendencies. So the one who's talking too much, I got to get him to be quiet and listen. And the other guy, I have to have him soften his questions. Does the AI help with that?
It really does. The AI will, you know, I engage with it every day. And we've designed a few different models that are for the practice sales team. And I, each time I do it, I get a different response. You know, the one that we most commonly use is a female voice. But she'll tell me, that, you know, I failed on this in this way or this way or this other way. And it's surprisingly, you know, detailed. So yes, if I didn't ask enough questions about her, I didn't learn enough about her business and her particular concerns, that she'll let me know, you know, if I seemed unsure about the price or whatever, then, you know, she'll let me know. It's very detailed. So.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I want to talk a little bit about the, you know, kind of the psychological safety in using AI versus a live person, because if I'm using my manager, I've had a couple bad months and I'm kind of nervous and the cortisol is flowing in my brain, and here's my manager who's a little bit dogmatic and I'm really struggling, and he's going to say, well, I want you to rehearse this, or how did you handle this objection? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of salespeople who get locked up and can't do what they need to do and kind of get frustrating. But with AI, do they get locked up, or is it like, well, it's just practice, it's just computer?
Yeah, I can't speak for, you know, every salesperson, but I would say that without question, compared to speaking with your manager or role-playing with your manager or some other human being, it's much less threatening. First of all, it's usually done in a private environment. So psychologically very safe in that respect. The batting cage portion of practice, when people are practicing in our conversation simulator, management can't see or hear any of those practice reps.
Oh, really?
And that's by design, because we wanted to give people a really kind of safe environment to be as bad as they might be and to kind of get comfortable learning that language. Because the way I think of our system, it really is a language learning system. And you're not learning the language of German or French. You're learning the language of your industry, your company, and your role, and the language of sales. And that is a language. And so we want to give people as much freedom to discover that language and their own ability to speak it without fear of judgment. And you know, when they're role playing with the AI is really non-threatening. And I know that you've even found that there were some studies that showed that AI was even more empathetic than human beings.
Yeah, absolutely, they're finding that.
But the feedback can't really be taken personally because it's an AI. It doesn't you know, dislike me because of who I am. It's literally assessing whether I hit the mark or not, and it has a scoring rubric that applies to me just like it applies to anybody else. And so I think we eliminate a lot of the human dynamic of human relationships. Some people might feel their manager doesn't like them. Some managers might feel like, I don't want to hurt Jim's feelings. I'm going to be careful mm-hmm. about this yep. and therefore not tell Jim what Jim needs to hear. Right. So, we found that the AI is a great coach because of that, objectivity and that specificity that it provides.
I think that's brilliant because, you know, we all have fear, we all have egos, and the AI takes the fear and the ego out of that. And I think it's a lot more effective. What's exciting to me is from a company perspective, for me to go out and hire two really outstanding, higher end, you know, directors of sales, I'm probably spending about 180 times two, three, four a year, plus benefits and everything else. I mean, if they're really good and I get them to work, you know, 50 hours a week, well, now I'm up to about $500,000, you know, getting four of them in there. And they need to take vacations. They cannot be at all places at all times. And that AI, is it under $500,000 a year for most companies? I know, you know, for 5,000 employees, you know, that's, it's, you know, probably $100, $50 per employee. But I think it's going to be a lot cheaper than trying to go out and hire those top people if you can find them.
Yeah, absolutely cheaper, but even more importantly, I think a lot more effective. And that's not to say that these sales coaches aren't great at what they do. Mm-hmm. I think where we come in, we provide reinforcement in a way that is, I think, essential. You know, I can't tell you how many sales leaders and or L&D pros that we talk to who are frustrated because what they teach doesn't stick.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stick because it's not consistently reinforced through practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I might have the greatest golf coach in the world who tells me exactly how to hold my golf club and exactly how to swing it. And maybe when I'm on the range, I get there and I start hitting a couple of good shots. But if I don't reinforce that and continue to practice it, or if I went right out on the golf course and tried to do it, it'd be a disaster. You have to have those reps. And the same applies to the craft of sales. So even though you might have some wonderful coaches, if they're not able to scale that skill, then it gets lost. And so I would love to have the kind of insight of a great sales coach or sales leader in the formation of the curriculum. And if they can effectively distill the organizational intelligence of a company to say, hey, this is the way to sell this product or service, great. Because then we would put that into practice. And then other than refinements or additional pieces to the curriculum, we kind of don't need them anymore. And so it's remarkable how good it is now and how much better it's getting all the time.
Yeah, it is. I think about, you know, VP of sales or, you know, director of revenue, chief revenue officer, they have some pain points that they're dealing with all the time. And one of the big ones that they deal with is turnover. It's a huge pain point. You know, I go out, I recruit this person. I spend an enormous amount of money on ads, getting them in the door, training them, getting them up to speed. And then it's like I've trained them for, you know, for whatever. They've gone out to work for my competition or they take another job. They just didn't fit. And part of it is, you know, sometimes some people are just not going to be successful. But I always think about it is, am I doing everything I can from the company side to make this or help this person become as successful as they can? And when I see, if I'm that sales chief revenue officer and I see a lot of turnover, that's a huge pain point.
Yeah. And it's, I think, always been just a very difficult problem for companies to solve, because of just practical considerations. So your training program can only be so long. And if you're a company that has a lot of headcount, that's has a national presence, and you're constantly hiring people, you got to get them trained up and out there, out in the field or on the phones as soon as you can, because it's expensive to keep them on payroll while you're training them. And you know, if they are trained well, but perhaps not, you know, continuously trained well, then very often the training is sort of heavily front loaded and incomplete. In other words, it's 2 weeks, it's 2 months, whatever the term is in their training program, they're getting so much information up front and they can't possibly retain it all. And the other thing that's missed is that transferring that new knowledge successfully into conversations, sales conversations, especially that are intentional and difficult, is incredibly hard. And you need practice with that. And so it takes a long time for someone to gain real fluency in that role. And very often they're put out into the field too quickly. And if they're a new hire, they've developed sales reluctance very quickly because they realize that they don't know what to say. They're not good. They're not closing deals. They're feeling rejected, and they quit. And so our goal is really to kind of extend training into the field and do it in a practical way that really integrates into the workday. So back to the point of Cliff Notes, we're taking the really critical techniques, words, questions to ask, the information, the actionable sort of strategies, conversational strategies, and we're packaging them in such a way that people can practice them and really learn them in a short period of time. And so if we can do that, we can improve the speed to proficiency, we can improve closing rates, and we can dramatically impact churn. And that's what we've done in numerous cases. So I think that typically a lot of sales companies like ours, sales enablement or revenue enablement companies, might sell to sales leaders, and we certainly do. But we love to get in front of the CFO if we can, because I think our service is all about ROI. It's all about how much can we show the delta between before practice and after practice. Because I guarantee you that if we're giving people the right techniques to practice, they're going to get better and their sales are going to improve.
Yeah. I think that's really crucial. The CFO, if you've got fans who are CFOs, this is a winner for a company, because a CFO can say, yeah, we just spent millions of dollars on this sales force, and we got everyone using it. I hear a lot of complaints. I haven't seen the numbers go up. I know you're happy with the numbers, but this is something that CFOs can look at, and you get hard data on saying, okay, this is how much practice is going on. And I think you're absolutely right, is 2 days of really hardcore practice is not as effective as 15 minutes a day over a 2 month period.
Correct.
And it's just the way the system is set up. It's like, okay, let's get them in, get them all trained, but there's no ongoing thing. And so when CFOs see that this is incremental and they can see the results, this is a real winning solution for companies.
It is. And it's, you know, there's learning science behind it, and the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve, that long-term retention is achieved through repetition in spaced intervals over time. And we as human beings, when you think about it, when you're in a conversation, right? Whether you realize it or not, you're pulling from stuff that is really kind of front and center. It's top of mind, if you will. And a lot of people kind of repeat the same things over and over again, because that's what's there. That's what they can retrieve. So we can kind of reprogram the brain in a little bit of a way by giving them reps on certain techniques and certain talk tracks. And then we put them on the spot in a sort of live open-ended scrimmage with the AI, where hopefully they're applying some of those they're applying some of those talk tracks in that session. So it's I think just repetition is definitely critical.
Well, I think you hit on something really important, is those neural pathways that are firing. You know, we have those neural pathways, and they go to what we're comfortable with and what we have a habit. And so changing that habit, we've got to set new patterns and new neural pathways. Yep. And that's the only way to do it. And it has to go over at least a 21-day period. Mm-hmm. And once those new habits of what you say and how do you say it and how do you respond become ingrained and become second nature for that salesperson, then that's where the magic happens.
Yeah. And it's also where the magic happens with the salespeople themselves, not just the whole organization, but I love it when the light bulb goes off and when we get a testimonial from somebody who says, you know, I was struggling and then I really just started practicing and all of a sudden I was in front of a customer and the words just came out. And I just sort of knew where to go. I knew how to direct the conversation and I had that confidence and it was there. The words were there. And I love hearing that. I love seeing that transformation take place. And it reminds me a lot of martial arts. It reminds me a lot of the Karate Kid. You remember wax on, wax off. Uh-huh. And, you know, if you can just have the discipline to habitually incorporate these best practices, roll them off your tongue, you know, say it over and over again. The words will be there when you need them. So I don't think there's any excuse for any company to not do the legwork, like put the time in to say, you know, what do we say when the customer says this? How do we differentiate ourselves from our competition? How do we explain and justify our price? If you haven't written that down as a company, if you haven't thought that through strategically and really, you know, thought about your customer and what they're going to respond to, how they're going to respond to, if you haven't done that as a leader, you have no business hiring anyone because yeah. You're not going to equip them the right way. So we like to make sure that we've got a great playbook and that we give it to people in a format that they can access and practice and test, put to the test in a scrimmage before they get in front of a human being. And what's really been great with chief revenue officers or CFOs, the CFOs really understand it. But a lot of times when I'm dealing with procurement or I'm dealing with someone who's trying to work me on price, I'll often ask them just a few questions to understand, to see if they understand how much it costs not to have a system like practice in place in their company, either for new hires or for their tenured veterans. Because and when you think, like you mentioned before, how much it costs to hire someone, to recruit someone, to train someone, and then to fire them, and all the investment that's gone into that, or how much it costs even worse to have that same investment and have someone working in your company for a year who still, after a year, doesn't really know how to sell. And that happens all the time. Yeah. And how many leads did they burn? How much money did you spend on that person, everything that they need to be out there, you know, face to face with customers, and how many lost opportunities resulted from that? Yeah. That's a big number. And so we see that happening over and over again. And at the very least, if your sales force is not dedicated to improving themselves, and we can determine that right away, we assign them practice. Ask them to go scrimmage with the AI. And if they don't do it, really? this is how you make your living. Mm-hmm. You have no interest in improving?
Yeah. Coach them up or coach them out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think it's a great way to establish new expectations for the culture of a company and accountability around a certain capability of how sales are conducted. You know, and I think we all, if you're a member of a sports team, or what was it? Bill Belichick was always famous for saying, you know, just do your job, right? And the Patriots system, I think, worked so well because everyone understood that they had a job to do, and that bar was set pretty high on what that job was, mm-hmm. and they all had to, you know, work together to do their job and to win as a team, and I think that same type of discipline, whether it's the SEAL team or a football team or a sales team should apply. And there should be that expectation. Like, here's the job. Do you know how to do it? When we go in and we find they don't know how to do it, it's kind of
stumped.
Whose fault is that?
Yeah,
it's the leader's fault.
Yeah,
it's the company's fault. Do they have the tools? And when we put them on the spot, do they know what to do?
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, that's. I think that everyone has tendencies that develop into patterns, and that has actions, results, and that's the reality. It kind of goes around in a circle, as you know, the 100X Leader book says. You know, we all have these tendencies, and you know, it goes around, you know, in a circle. Our reality is based upon the things that are coming out of our mouth, and if you can discipline that tongue, I mean, there's more to that person's life. That they, I mean, their relationships, everything gets better. You know, it's a very, very important skill to learn and have discipline over. So I think that's really important.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is have you do a demo and show everyone how this thing works. I don't want you to do the live AI with the thing because we're just doing the podcast here, but I want you to talk. Is there a way you can bring it up on your phone and maybe talk to it and show us how it works?
Yeah, sure. So I think what I'll demo is, let's see here. See which one I should do. So we have, SDRs, cold call,
sales development leads.
And you know, there's probably nothing more difficult in sales than a cold call.
Oh yeah.
Especially a cold call. We try to warm them up a little bit, but when someone answers the phone, you don't recognize the number, but maybe if that number's come up 3 or 4 times, you just pick it up and you answer it and you're like, hello, I'm not. And all of a sudden someone starts telling you.
So are you going to do a cold call?
I'm going to do a cold call.
Oh my God.
And I'll do a cold call with a prospect that we trained to be a potential practice customer. But the goal of this cold call is for me to get a meeting, just okay. A 20-minute Zoom meeting. You know, that's the goal. Because I want to have a deeper dive, a little bit more discovery on their needs as a customer. And then I also want to demonstrate our solution and how it might be a good fit for them, right? But the first thing I'd have to do is ingratiate myself, introduce myself, and apologize for interrupting her day, and just kind of pique her interest enough to where she'll think, okay, this sounds like it might be a fit. I'll give you 20 minutes of my time next Tuesday. Right. That's the objective.
Wow. I'm really putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. And, and this one's pretty easy. And this is actually an old model. So, we trained this months ago. We've gotten better. I need to go back and retrain it, but we can make the models, like, as I mentioned before, easy, medium, hard, or impossible. And, you know, friendly and not so friendly. So, this one's pretty, this on the grand scheme of things, this is a pretty friendly one.
Put the speaker on, yeah. So I can hear it, and then kind of hold it up to the mic too, so that our audience can hear it too.
Yeah. So I'll see if I can get a meeting with her. And then at a certain point, I'll end the role play and ask her to provide some feedback.
Okay.
And to coach me on what I could do differently next time.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, it's Practice on the Line, ready to help you practice, progress, and profit. When you are ready, start the role play by saying ring, ring.
Ring, ring.
Yeah. Who is this?
Hi. Hey, my name's Ed. I'm with a company called Practice, and your name came up as a sales leader who would probably love our technology. Could I just get 25 seconds to tell you what people love about it? Does that sound fair?
Yeah, I don't have time for this. What makes you think I'm interested?
Yeah, I know. And by the way, first of all, I'm so sorry for calling and interrupting your day. I did not. I mean, I know this is a cold call, and I just your name came up as someone who we felt like you would want to know about our technology, and that's all. We help sales teams practice. Does your team practice at all?
Look, I'm swamped right now. I've got back-to-back meetings all day. Just get to the point.
Okay.
How is this relevant to me?
It's relevant because we can actually improve your sales team's performance dramatically within 90 days, believe it or not. And we do it pretty simply by helping them practice the right things to say in sales situations. And most sales teams, they don't know what to say. Imagine a sports team that didn't practice. So I'm just kind of curious, does your team practice? And actually, let me ask you this. If I asked your whole team your most common objection, how many would get it right?
Honestly, I don't know, but I can tell you we do have some training programs in place. So why would I switch when our current solution seems to be working fine?
Have you ever tested it? Like if I did ask your team all the same objection, how many would get it right, do you think?
Look, I get what you're saying, but testing isn't something we prioritize. So how can you prove that your solution will actually work?
We prove it all the time.
Numbers sound too good to be true.
I know, right? They do. But you know what? Practice works. No one gets good at anything without practice. The only thing that really changes behavior is practice. And guess what? Most sales teams don't do it. And so that's why you really kind of have to see it. I just love to get 20 minutes of your time just to show you why we're different and how we've been able to actually improve revenue by 30% very often and within 60, 90 days. And I know it sounds crazy, but you just have to see it.
All right. You seem to know your stuff. If you can really show me how this works and prove that it can help my team, I might be interested. But I need to see some solid data. What are the next steps?
The next steps, and I can certainly send you a couple of case studies, but I'd just love to get on a call with you. I want to learn a little bit more about your sales team and your sales process. And then I want to show you how our technology works because it's really not that complicated. It's just been packaged in a beautiful, efficient, effective, engaging way. And it's going to make your team sales ninjas when it comes to the sales conversation. And that's going to move revenue and that's going to improve retention and everything. So how about Tuesday around 10 o'clock?
Tuesday at 10 could work. Just send me those case studies beforehand so I can review them. If I see the potential, I'll be ready for the call.
That sounds great. Your voice changed. That's wild. Okay. Can we end the role play and please provide some feedback?
Your overall score is 6 out of 10. Here's your breakdown. 1, 6. You were polite, but took a bit too long to get to the point. You acknowledged my concerns, but could have been more direct. 2, 5. You asked a relevant question about practice, but didn't dig deep enough into my specific pain points. Listening skills were okay, but there was room for improvement in understanding my current situation. 3, 6. You presented the solution, but could have been clearer about how it directly benefits my team. The mention of improving revenue was compelling, but needed more backing data. 4, 6. You addressed my skepticism, but could have offered more concrete proof. Reinforcing the value of practice was good, but it felt a bit vague. 5, 7. You proposed a clear next step, but could have emphasized the urgency or the potential impact more. Offering to send case studies was a good move. You maintained a friendly tone throughout the conversation. You demonstrated persistence and adaptability when faced with objections. Focus more on understanding specific pain points and tailoring your responses accordingly. Provide more concrete data and examples to back up your claims. Your initial approach was a bit hesitant, but you improved as the conversation progressed. The transition to proposing a meeting was handled well, showing you were listening. You overcame my skepticism about the effectiveness of your solution. You used qualifying questions to gauge my team's practices and needs. Overall, good job, but there's still room to refine your approach and make it more impactful.
Okay, thanks.
That was amazing. That's incredible.
Well, I need more practice. She was kind of hard on me, but justifiably so. And sometimes I'll actually do it and I'll call and I'll be really bad or I'll try different things. That time I was actually trying to get the meeting, but I could have done better, clearly.
Well, she was a hard customer. I mean, I was amazed because I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah,
I'm being, you know, difficult, and you're doing this here live. You know, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's exciting, and it's getting better all the time. And when we showed it to somebody recently who's a leader of a big sales organization, and he said, "I feel like you just showed me a flying car." I said, "I know, it's unbelievable," where it's going is actually even more exciting. I mean, where this is going to be a year from now, I don't really want to get into that, but it's pretty awesome. We're just excited about how well this experience, this new capability, aligns with you know, the platform that we had been building and refining for years now. And they complement each other symbiotically, beautifully, because, you know, as advanced as AI is and is getting by the day, human beings, I mean, it's outpaced human evolution, right? So like we still learn and develop at the same pace we always have, right? You know, children learn language a certain way. It's through, you know, sort of modeling what their parents do and hearing words and reciting them and repetition. Same thing goes for a new person on a sales team. You know, you're going to look and see how Jim or Susie does it, and you're going to model your behavior after them, and you're going to study, and you're going to learn and try to understand, and you're going to do a lot of reps, and you're going to get in front of a lot of customers. So let's help you get in front of customers more effectively, and let's use AI to do it, because selling face-to-face or over the phone is not going to change. I don't care how much AI there is in the world. We're still going to, otherwise none of us are going to have anything to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where we're focused on. Can we help optimize and improve conversation skills, primarily in the world of sales, but we're getting better and better at it all the time.
Oh my gosh. I'm just blown away. I'm so amazed. I mean, I feel like I could go into a company and say, "Hey, if I improve your revenue by $10 million, would you write me a check for $1 million? Here you go. Sign up with Practice."
Yeah. I wish we could do that. I think it's that's always a tougher sale. It's just, and by the way, there's, you know, there are a lot of things obviously that go into a sale and whether.
Well, yeah. Talk to me about this. So, I mean, you can't, this is not off the shelf. It's very customized. I mean, this is very different from insurance company, from a lawn care company. They have two different things. They're different parts of the sales process. One company might have it down, the other company might not. Mm-hmm. So you've got to go through and look at that sales pipeline and say, okay, this is the one area in that pipeline that if we drill down on that and get the team to practice on this, that's kind of the lever that moves the revenue needle, that yep. little focus. So it takes time and effort for you to go in there. And then after you figure it out, sometimes, you know, the sales scripts you're looking at, I imagine, is like, we could do a little bit better than this.
Yeah.
And it takes time and effort to do that on your end. And then understanding enough about AI, this is not just a couple sentence of prompting. There's a lot of prompting. An engineer has to go in and mm-hmm. prompt that AI and build that out. So for a company just to say, "Hey, we want to give this a try," I mean, you probably got what, $15,000-$20,000 invested just to get a big company to try it, or am I off on that?
You know, I don't want to talk about price really, other than just because every situation is different.
Okay.
And I think that we, you know, at a certain point, we can get this experience to a point where it might be a product-led company and you can just go log on online and go through a process and get some version of this. But more likely, it's always going to be a bit of a professional service to a degree, just because we get very detailed and very nuanced in terms of how we set these, you know, stand these things up. Because without that level of detail, I just don't think the results are as good.
And it's not a one and done, you know, because you can do A/B testing. You can say, okay, well, this is part of the salespeople are going to do this. This part of the salespeople are going to do this. You've got multiple different things that on the sales process. Mm-hmm. I think there's fundamentals in the sales process, but there's so much nuance with different personalities, sales personalities that you're working with, and different products that you're selling, you know, because they have different benefits and different motivations for the buyers. They're different people, you know, I've got B2C, B2B, all sorts of different things to look at. So there's a lot of front end work is what I'm trying to get across before.
There is. And we've gotten very efficient at how we approach a new customer and how we. I had turned my
practice.
I had turned my ringer off so that I could do that demo. We've gotten very efficient at this process of onboarding a new customer, and understanding exactly what kind of information we need in order for us to do our job. We don't consider ourselves sales gurus or specialists, by the way. I mean, we're fairly content or methodology agnostic. We do have a system that I think is very good at sussing out what needs to be known in order to conduct a successful sale, if that makes sense. And so we often will get content from some companies where we can look at it and, you know, I'm not a sales coach, but I can look at it and know that's not very good sales content because it's just not going to appeal to a human being. And so, so we actually built a content wizard that allows us to leverage AI, to generate, more compelling, persuasive sales conversations by, asking a few questions around, you know, what is the product or service I'm selling? Who's the customer? What's my objective in this moment? What are some nuances to consider? And, you know, even what are some sales methodologies that I should do this in the style of? So, for example, if I want to do it in the style of the Challenger sale, and it will churn out content that is specific to that style. Because we have a lot of companies that will use you know, various sales methodologies.
Mike Lyman.
Miller Hyman, and they want it done that way. Most often they'll give us the content that's already done that way. It might've been written by the Sandler guy or written by the, Challenger people. So, we don't care. It's whatever you think your team needs, but we do need to know as much as we can about,
what the objections are.
And then we'll, help curate it into our system and then obviously train the AI and then a lot of it is really, just being your partner shoulder to shoulder. We want to take the load off of a sales manager because I think a lot of SaaS offerings never overcome the change management hurdles in a company because they put too much of a burden on one person or one team. And there's too much of a presumption that, gee, if you have this new technology, everyone's just going to adopt it. Everything's going to be great. Well, no, it's not the case. You know, everyone needs to be, we can't put another load on someone. We need to take a load off.
I
remember a friend of mine used to say, it's kind of a non sequitur, but, used to say, that the best marriages are, does the partner take a load off or put one on? Right. And so we want to take a load off when we come in. We want, you know, we don't want to impose on someone. And so we like to go in and say, you just give us, these pieces of information, and what we're going to give back to you is something that you can then critique and we'll make it better. And so we're constantly, trying to more efficiently help them do their job.
Yeah. If I was a company and I was a VP of sales and I said, okay, we're going to go from Salesforce to Zoho or to HubSpot or something like that. I mean, that is a heavy lift for an operations team.
Yeah.
And here it sounds like this is a lot less of a heavy lift, but there's a return on investment that's exponential.
Well, and I think the other piece that's really important is just the learner piece, the actual frontline rep who's engaging with it. Mm-hmm. And, nobody likes training. training is just sort of, you know, I got to go through training, or, oh, I've got to practice, you know. It's not, you know, practice can be very satisfying and even kind of in a way glamorous. I mean, I think of all the movies like Rocky, there's always that long, you know, montage in the second act where, you know, he's going, he's trying to get stronger, he's, you know, running and drinking the eggs and all that stuff. And that's what practice is. It's that time where, you know, you as a human being are going to take the initiative and you're going to get stronger. You're going to get better. And it's going to pay off for you if you do it. And we, you know, we can.
Yeah, I can hear the Rocky music in my head now.
Yeah. And we can lead a horse to water, you know, but it's a choice that people are going to make. And we love it when we find the right culture in a company where they've got a bunch of people rowing in the same direction who all want to be better and inspire one another. That's great. That's not always the case. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's usually not the case. So can we at least make this experience engaging, but in a fun and kind of challenging way? Like, you heard that phone call. After she gave me that feedback, I want to call her back because, you know, like, and it's funny because what we've experienced so far, and we've only been really deploying this technology for like the last 6-8 months, and, you know, we're seeing this massive uptick in engagement because this experience is already inherently gamified. Because when you get on the call with the AI, you don't know what he or she is going to say. You know, one of the models we trained recently, it's a sale that takes place at the door, and a little kid comes up and interrupts. And the dog's barking in the background. The dog interrupts. And so we can add a lot of different distractions that kind of come in. It's kind of fun. There are little Easter eggs we put in there. But you know, you're on the spot with that AI and that customer, and you need to lead them towards a certain conclusion. And you either do or you don't. And you do so with certain tactics that you either remember and deploy effectively or you don't. And when you don't, you guess what? You can go back to the batting cage. You go back to practice. Say, oh yeah, I gotta brush up on the price conversation. It's right there. Go right now. Go back. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so now people are more attuned to the importance of practice and more excited about doing it because they can apply what they practiced immediately in the scrimmage with the AI. Mm-hmm. So it's a way more engaging experience for the sales reps, and they love it. And especially the people who love it are the new hires because they're so eager to get better.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The veterans, the tenured reps do really love the AI piece, because, you know, it's an ego thing. I think it's a challenging thing. Uh-huh, right. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden they realize, wow, I'm not as good as I think I thought I was. Like I just had that experience. Mm-hmm. 6 out of 10. What? Oh, I'm better than that. Come on, right? Yeah. But I could have gotten a 10 out of 10.
Yep.
But I didn't.
Yep.
So, it's great when we can offer something that is embraced, because I think, you know, there was a L&D thought leader in the 50s. I think his name was McKinley, who developed a way to assess the success of a training program.
Yeah.
And it basically had four key mm-hmm. pillars or components. Mm-hmm. Well, number one, did they engage with the learning? Did they actually engage with it and therefore actually do it repeatedly perhaps? And then the next was, did they learn what you wanted them to learn? Mm-hmm. Number three, did they apply it on the job, you know, with customers? And number four, did it actually achieve the goals, the business outcomes? You know, did it drive revenue, for example?
Yeah.
And so when we designed this whole experience, the entire thing was based on those four pillars, right? So number one, we got to engage the learner.
Yeah.
Because if they don't want to use it, then it never goes anywhere. And it's got to be better than just something that's mandated.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it better be effective. They better, through the time they spend on practice, that better stick. They better learn. And so we've proven that. And then are they going to apply it in the field? Well, yeah, if it's good. So the techniques better be good and they better deliver results so that ultimately achieves the business outcomes. And so I think that, you know, we've learned a lot, but we've designed a very elegant solution that is very practical and that has proven generates proven results.
Yeah. I one story that always comes up to mind is I think about sales reps when I was managing large sales teams. People would come to me and have this frank conversation. Jim, I need to make more money. I'm getting married. I have this going on. I want to go on this vacation. I need to make more money. If I had a tool like Practice to say, here, I'm going to give you this. You do this 15 minutes a day, and I promise you'll have the extra amount that you need if you're faithful to do the practice, because your sales will go up. If I had that, that would have been just a weight off of my back, and it's a win-win for everyone. Mm-hmm. So I love it. Yeah. Let me ask you this. As we come to an end here, Ed, I really appreciate you giving me all this information and talking to everyone. If you are going to reach out to a senior vice president of sales or director of revenue, how do they contact you? Do they just go to your website and can they talk to you directly, or do you have a, how would you make that happen?
Well, if they're not already being harassed by us, then yes, they can certainly come to the website and mm-hmm. and reach us that way. Probably the easiest way to do it.
Sounds good. Well, I can't thank you enough today for being here. And I really appreciate our audience taking time to log in, like, and subscribe and all that fun stuff. So this is Jim Ketting, and we'll see you next time. And hopefully we'll have some more practice by then.